In Colorado, the trial of James Holmes is turning to his state of mind during his admitted Aurora Theater shooting spree. Holmes pled not guilty by reason of insanity. His attorneys say he was in a psychotic break. But his defense doesn't have to prove he was insane as much as the prosecutors have to prove he wasn't. And prosecutors say Holmes is sane and should be held accountable for killing 12 and trying to murder 70 more. Experts say this may be the first time a jury has ever had to consider the insanity defense in a death penalty case in Colorado. How hard is it to prove? Christopher Slobogan is director of the Criminal Justice Program at Vanderbilt University Law School and associate professor of psychiatry at Vanderbilt's Medical School. Professor Slobogan, welcome.
Well, thank you for having me on the program, Robin.
And let's start simply. What is the definition of insanity? We know there's one that's medical, one that's legal, but what is it? And is it the same state to state?
No, it's definitely not the same state to state. The insanity defense, the legal test for insanity in Colorado, is a version of the so-called Macnaughton test, which actually originated back in 1843 with the House of Lords in England. And essentially, the issue is whether the defendant was so diseased or defective in mind at the time of the crime, and here I'm quoting from the Colorado statute, that he was incapable of distinguishing right from wrong with respect to the crime.
So incapable of distinguishing right from wrong. And is there another pillar? Because it's often mentioned that a person may be incapable of stopping himself.
There are some states that recognize what's sometimes called the irresistible impulse defense, but that's not part of the insanity formulation in the state of Colorado.
To many, just getting armored up and attacking dozens in a movie theater is by definition insane. So what legally has to be proven here if the defense wants to prove that James Holmes was?
Well, I think what the defense is going to argue is that even though there was evidence of premeditation and planning, that Holmes was afflicted with a very serious mental illness that was getting progressively worse and worse. And I think they'll also try to make Holmes's thought process look as incoherent and bizarre as possible. It'll be very hard for the defense to win, but that's, I think, going to be the defense plan.
Well, how do you do that? What do you have to do to prove that?
Well, you need to show a history of psychiatric hospitalizations or at least some other concrete evidence of mental illness. And I think they have some evidence of that. In fact, I think they have pretty extensive evidence of that. Also, I think probably the experts on Holmes' side will argue that Holmes is suffering from what's called late-onset schizophrenia. And that often is a more intense type of schizophrenia and much harder to treat.
How tricky does that get for defense to bring up things like schizophrenia? People have varying degrees of understanding of psychosis and schizophrenia, which is so far different from, let's say, depression, you know, both mental illnesses. And people on the jury may know somebody who's suffering from schizophrenia or would be bipolar, and yet they've never exhibited any violence like this. So how tricky does this get for defense?
Yeah, that's right. I think, first of all, many people have not experienced directly symptoms of schizophrenia in their friends or acquaintances. So they have, I think, a somewhat skewed view of what psychosis is all about. And when they do hear about psychosis, when they think about serious mental illness, they often associate it with extreme dangerousness, which is one reason the defense is going to have a hard time here, because the same evidence that is meant to suggest mitigation, is meant to create sympathy at the same time, I think, might scare jurors. And that, of course, can hurt the defense case.
Right. Well, what about the challenges faced by the prosecution? Now, full disclosure, I have a relative who, when he's off his medications, is clearly and discernibly very, very ill.
Mm-hmm.
But we know that others off their medications aren't as discernibly ill. How does that impact the prosecution if they're going to argue that James Holmes or any other defendant planned what he was doing? I mean, can you use that as an example of someone not being mentally ill if they are able to plan something?
Yeah, I think the prosecution is definitely going to emphasize that there was extensive premeditation, extensive planning in this case. And I think to a layperson, that intuitively means the person could not be seriously mentally ill. However, it is important to understand that, in fact, a lack of intent can form the basis for insanity defense, but so can intentional action. In fact, in two famous cases I think everyone knows about, the defendant clearly intended to carry out the criminal act and nonetheless was found insane. John Hinckley clearly intended to kill President Reagan, and yet he was found insane. Andrea Yates, the woman who drowned her five children, clearly intended to kill those children and yet was found insane. So it's incorrect as a legal matter to say just because someone intended or planned a criminal act, they cannot be found insane. On the other hand, I think that's what the prosecution will try to argue.
Yeah. And would you also guess that that's what the defense will argue back, you know, what you just laid out?
I think the defense will argue that even though there was some evidence of premeditation, planning can be part of the disease. Yeah. And they will say that Holmes's thought process was, even though it was premeditated, was also incoherent and consisted of very bizarre ideas.
You mentioned those two cases in which strategy was involved, and yet the two defendants were both declared not guilty by reason of insanity. But as we understand it here in Colorado, this might be the first time an insanity defense is coming before a jury in a death penalty case. What impact does that have, that it's a first?
It's very difficult to win an insanity claim in a contested murder trial just because of the serious nature of the offense. Juries have a very hard time buying that a person should be found not guilty of the crime of killing someone. I think jurors in these kinds of cases believe that if the person commits the crime, they ought to do the time. And defense attorneys know this. There's also some very interesting research. I'm not sure defense attorneys know this, but maybe they intuit it, that there's a pretty high correlation between defendants who assert the insanity defense at trial and death sentences at sentencing. In other words, if a person asserts an insanity defense at trial and loses, and then they go on to the sentencing proceeding, it's very likely they'll be sentenced to death. And I think that has something to do with the fact that jury thinks that this individual is particularly dangerous.
Well, but some are guessing that the defense in this case might be thinking that to put out the insanity defense might be a mitigating factor at the sentencing.
Yes, I think that would be what one would hope would be the case. Unfortunately, that can sometimes be a double-edged sword.
Right.
The same testimony that looks sympathetic from one angle looks aggravating from another because it suggests abnormal dangerousness.
And juries have then decided for the death penalty. Talk about some changes that other states are making to the insanity plea. For instance, Oregon.
Well, in the state of Oregon, some years ago, the legislature decided to change the name of the plea from not guilty by reason of insanity to guilty but insane. And the idea here is to stress to the jury that a person can still be found responsible for the criminal act. At the same time, they'll end up in a mental hospital because of their serious mental illness. Some scholars don't like this change in verdict name because, in theory at least, the person is not guilty of the crime if they are found insane. But at the same time, I think to a lot of lay people, it makes sense.
It would seem that the simplest thing for a defense to do would be to just allow their client to be off medication or any kind of treatment leading up to and then through the trial. And if it is that severe a mental illness, it will show.
In fact, defense attorneys have tried that ruse on many occasions. And unfortunately, I think for some defense attorneys and for some defendants, that ruse is probably unconstitutional. Criminal defendants have a right to be tried while competent, or put another way, they cannot be tried unless they are competent to stand trial. And if they're taken off medication, it's very likely they would be incompetent to stand trial. They'd be unable to communicate with their attorney, unable to understand what the witnesses are saying. And there are only a few states that have ever allowed that particular scenario to take place, and most states will not allow it.
And very last question. Did James Holmes have to agree to this defense? In other words, is he saying, I'm insane?
I don't know if James Holmes has agreed to the defense or not. In fact, there's quite a bit of controversy over who gets to decide whether the insane defense is raised. Many scholars believe that it should be up to the criminal defendant to decide whether the insane defense is raised, but many criminal defense attorneys will argue to the contrary, that this is a matter of strategy and the defense attorneys get to make that decision.
Christopher Slobogan, director of the Criminal Justice Program at Vanderbilt University Law School, associate professor of psychiatry at Vanderbilt's Medical School. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you.